On this week's show, get the inside story on how General Motors rebuilt its relationship with suppliers when we're joined by special guest Steve Kiefer, GM's Global VP of Purchasing and Supply Chain. Coming up next on Autoline This Week. Underwriting for Autoline This Week has been provided by Borg Warner. And now, here's your host, John McElroy.
I want to thank you all for joining us on Autoline This Week. The topic today is going to be all about automotive purchasing and supply chain. Would you like to have a budget of your own every year of over $100 billion? That's what my special guest today has. Stephen Kiefer is the Vice President of Purchasing, Global Purchasing, and Supply Chain at General Motors. Steve, great having you on the show here.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
Also joining us today are David Welch from Bloomberg and Daron Levine, who's got his own radio channel on SiriusXM Radio, channel 121. When do you air there?
Noon on Saturday and 9 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Okay, great. And great having the both of you
Thank
here.
Thank you.
Steve, you're making great progress with GM purchasing. It used to be known in the industry as, if you were a supplier, one of the worst to deal with. That's no longer the case. General Motors just got elected by its peers as the most supportive OEM of suppliers. You yourself got the Purchasing Executive of the Year award. You got to be pretty pleased with that. But tell me, I mean, for most of my career, all I got was an earful of belly aches from suppliers saying, I hate working with GM. Now they're saying that you're the most supportive. What's going on there? What have you changed?
Well, first of all, it's humbling to get such recognition, but it's much appreciated. You know, I was a supplier to General Motors for about 20 years, so I know a bit some of that history, and I know what some of the suppliers have said, and maybe some of them still say. The progress has really been great, and it really is all about relationships. It's all about having great relationships with our suppliers and engaging in activities where we're really focused on win-win. And, you know, when our suppliers are doing well, we're doing well.
And you've got this thing that you call the SSE, the Strategic Supplier Engagement. I think I've got that right. And what this is like the creme de la creme of your supply chain, is it not?
Yeah, well, it's we focus on sort of our top 400 suppliers, and it's really a process of transparency. It's a process that we use to give very clear feedback to our suppliers in a very structured fashion on how they're performing from a business standpoint and a cultural standpoint. We share that with them in every meeting, and it helps them get better. But one thing we've done recently to try to improve the process is something we call SSE 360, which is turning the tables and letting the suppliers tell us how we're doing. And sometimes it's painful, but we're learning from it and we're getting better from it.
Steve, do you have people who kind of monitor how much the suppliers are making in terms of overall profitability? Do you keep track of their health for reasons both good and bad? You want to make sure they're healthy. You can't have a supplier going bankrupt or you know, being short on cash and then shorting you parts at a crucial hour. In the old days, they used to say that GM and Ford would track supplier profitability. If they were making too much money, there'd be a knock on the door. Hey, guys, let's look at this contract.
Yeah, well, I think the first part's still true. I mean, we certainly monitor the financial health of all of our suppliers. It's a requirement to do business with us. We want to make sure we're dealing with suppliers that have a solid balance sheet and have a solid mm-hmm. future. So that part is still true. But no longer are we knocking on doors and saying you're making too much money. You know, I would say it quite differently. I actually prefer the suppliers that are making good money. As I said, I was a supplier for 20 years. I know how hard it is to make money in this industry as a supplier, and some of our best suppliers are some of our more profitable ones. That means they're running a good business. That means they're efficient. That means they're growing their top and bottom line. And I don't want to talk with them about profit transfer. What I want to talk about is how we can learn from each other and both win together. It's a much different approach than beating down on pricing because somebody's making too much money. And by the way, I would much rather have a profitable supplier than a non-profitable supplier, because we also maintain a pretty rigorous process of troubled suppliers. And I tell you, we spend a lot of time, a lot of wasted time, dealing with the troubled suppliers who aren't making money. And that's not a fun process. You don't want to be in that process.
Steve, I'd like to ask you about General Motors as a company. You're a senior executive in a key role at General Motors, and General Motors has been a company that's been reorganized in bankruptcy, just as your previous employer, Delphi, mm-hmm. was. And it kind of feels like a different place today. The products are much improved, according to independent reviewers. One of the big questions that Wall Street has is, will General Motors be able to remain stable even if the level of sales falls, as it inevitably does when the cycle goes down. Tell me some of your impressions of General Motors as a new company, how you can tell this is a different place, and do you think General Motors will be able to stay stable in the next down cycle of sales, and why do you think that?
Right, right. Great question. First of all, my impressions of General Motors, you know, I joined about 2.5 years ago, and it's a very different company than, you know, what I knew sort of 20 years ago. First of all, the product portfolio, as you mentioned, it's outstanding. We've got the best products that we've had in the history of the company. Every brand has just got, you know, too many to name right now on this show, but we're just really proud of all the product offering. And then the leadership team. When I first met with Mary Barr and Mark Royce about moving to General Motors, just the different approach that they take, I would say, hands-on, informal leadership style that really empowers all of our people. So I think the culture is very, very different, and that's part of the reason for the success. And then your third question about, you know, are we ready for a downturn? I mean, first of all, I would say we're extremely optimistic. I mean, these are the best of times, of course, in the strong market that we have, especially here in North America. But like all of our peers and probably our suppliers, we all have contingency plans in place, and I would say through our, as we say, fortress balance sheet, I think our company is very well prepared for any inevitable downturn. I would also say that we've done the appropriate amount of cost cutting and efficiency of the organization to be well prepared for an eventual downturn, whenever that may be.
Following up on Daron's question, are you working with your suppliers for this eventuality? We know there's a downturn out there someplace. GM is in pretty good shape, as you say. You call it your fortress balance sheet. Is GM purchasing working with suppliers for that downturn that's out there?
You know, John, I would say not directly working with them planning on a downturn, but we do speak very openly, and it's back to this concept of being open and transparent in our discussions. We talk about what downturn scenarios might look like, and we especially talk about it when we're talking with suppliers about capital investment. Because, you know, we all want to be very frugal with our capital investment. This is such a capital-intensive industry, and sort of the difference between making money and losing money, sometimes it's the difference between sort of 85% utilization and 90% utilization of your capital. So we try to treat our suppliers like an extension of ourselves, an extension of our value stream, and we don't want any of our suppliers to make risky investments. So when there's concerns about what may happen next year, what may happen with oil prices, what impact might it have on the truck business is a good example. We cannot make enough trucks today, as you know, and we're trying to encourage all of our suppliers to increase output in those critical mid-size and full-size truck components. There's a lot of dialogue about how do we make sure that the investments we make right now will be smart for the future. So it's kind of a long way of saying, through open dialogue, I think we're adequately managing risk for the future.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, I wanted to ask, your life as a supplier probably has changed somewhat with the advent of these autonomous systems that we read so much about and see so much about in cars, and also with the advent of driverless technology that's in your R&D labs today and is going to be on the road some way. Could you talk a little bit about the companies you're dealing with now and how your life as a purchasing chief has really changed because of this new technology that seems to be creeping faster almost every day?
Yeah, it's certainly an exciting technology, and you know, it's going to be one of the big disruptors in our industry. And as we keep saying, we want to lead the disruption, not follow it. So, first of all, I would say, you know, some of the announcements that we've made recently, showing that we're playing a very active role in this space. Some of our, first of all, our technical announcements about putting an autonomous fleet on our technical center here in Warren, Michigan, this year. It's an important first step for our engineers to basically develop the product and refine the technology. But the kind of question about the suppliers. If you look at some of the investments we're making, we made this investment back in January in Lyft, car sharing activity. It's not directly autonomous, but stay tuned. One day it will be, and it's helping us learn the usage patterns of consumers in that part of the market. Some of the others, this investment we made in some Silicon Valley companies like Sidecar and Cruise. These are companies that have some unique software capabilities that are going to help accelerate our movement into the autonomous space. Some of our contracts with companies like Mobileye out of Israel to develop some really interesting artificial intelligence to help us better prepare for the autonomous space. All of these things are requiring us to work differently from a contract standpoint. So the days of old sort of boilerplate terms and conditions that we used to use in the traditional component purchasing activity are very, very different now. They're based on much more sharing of intellectual property, much more focus on getting technology into the market sooner, and then finding ways that the supplier and General Motors can both find win-win opportunities through this.
How do you even keep track of it all? I mean, every day I pick up, or I was going to say pick up the newspaper, every time I fire up my laptop, it seems like there's a new mobility company, whether it's autonomous, connected car, mobility services, or what. There's so much more coming out. How do you, and maybe that's not your job, but maybe that's on the R&D side. How do you know that you're betting on the right one and the better solution isn't right around the corner?
I keep up with it by watching AutoLine.
Ah, right. You said the right thing, man.
Reading all these great publications, listening to Sirius Radio. Seriously, you know, we reorganized recently and put a specific group in place focused on autonomous. So we've got an organization now in place that's got a single point responsibility for our autonomous activity. And these guys are doing an incredible job. We've taken some of the best and brightest from across the organization. And it's not just about engineering, right? This is a totally different business model. So we're bringing in a lot of different people from the organization who are right in the middle of this. We've got, obviously, we've got our offices out in Silicon Valley, which are finding us some great opportunities and companies to work with. And it's not just about Silicon Valley. I mentioned Mobileye out of Israel. Our technical center in Israel is also helping us just find all kinds of interesting technologies and helping us stay abreast of this. Where to make the bets is a tough question, though, right? I mean, in a company like General Motors, we're placing a lot of bets, a lot of strategic bets. We'll see how many of them pay out, but I assure you we're gonna have as many bets as possible covered so that we can lead this disruption.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to autonomous, how much of this do you want to own and keep in-house versus letting suppliers or other partners do it? Because, you know, if you do it all in-house, you know, maybe you fall behind because you're not getting access to every mind that's out there. You know, you've seen like Procter & Gamble at their most innovative height. They relied on a lot of outsiders to get innovation. They didn't think they had to do it all, you know, within their own product development and R&D centers. How do you guys view that at GM, particularly with autonomous, because that's kind of the next frontier that everybody's looking at?
Yeah, it's a really good question and a really difficult question, because you can imagine when you dissect autonomous, there's just all kinds of aspects of it. I would say, if I were to say it simply, I think our general philosophy would be characterized as activities that will differentiate our vehicles, will differentiate General Motors in the marketplace. Those are the things we want to control quite closely. Areas that are probably more generic to the industry, and I could cite a few of them. I mean, maybe you might say mapping technology, for example, is a good one. Mm-hmm. That's one that we said publicly at CES in January that we had some concepts that we were working with Mobileye on. That's a business model that might be good to share with the industry. It might be good for society. It might be good for the industry. But there's other examples of very specific activities that impact the user experience that will really differentiate the GM vehicles, and those will be the ones that we want to keep in-house. But the list in the space of autonomous, because I just kind of hit on two sort of generic things, when you get to the sensors or different algorithms or different safety features, you can imagine quite a rich dialogue on every one of these. And I would say that for the most part, it's a bit of a case-by-case basis, but that high-level philosophy, I think, would kind of characterize what we're doing.
That makes sense.
Because I was going to ask you that about electric cars. Mm-hmm. You know, when you come to GM powertrain, which you ran, I mean, you guys run all aspects of the powertrain, engine, transmission, and whatnot. But when I look at your electric cars, so much of the Chevrolet Bolt is being purchased from LG. So how do you make that make-buy decision? Do we make it in-house? Do we buy it from the outside? Where in traditional powertrain, it's definitely 100% or close in-house, versus the approach you're taking with electric vehicles?
Yeah, that's also a really good question. I would say the philosophy in our global propulsion systems, the artist formerly known as powertrain, is really, I would say, very simple or very similar to what I was describing earlier. So we have some activities, for example, in our 9 and 10 speed transmissions where we're working cooperatively with Ford Motor Company. Great partner, we're working together. We feel that will help both of us, that'll help the industry, and we don't feel that it's so critical for differentiating the vehicle. Mm-hmm. With the Chevy Bolt, and I'm glad you brought that up because we're just so excited about the introduction of the Chevy Bolt this year. year. And the fact that, by the way, I was out at the Orion plant the other day, and we're running pre-production cars down the line. So it's really exciting to see, you know, the Bolt. It's not just sort of a media play. It's not just a lot of hype. This is a car that we're actually building the early versions right now.
By the way, the short sellers of Tesla stock, they're also very excited about this.
Yeah. Well, I won't comment on that. I won't comment on that.
Are you referring to Tesla when you were talking about media plays and hype?
I'm not even familiar with that company. No, I joke. Back to the question at hand, though, I would say that, you know, when there's technology that will differentiate us, and I tell you, on the Chevy Bolt, the partnership with LG has really been outstanding. This is a vehicle that, as you know, is going to have at least 200 miles range and sell for about $30,000 after rebates. And I've driven it several times. I mean, this is a real driver's car. A lot of space, a lot of technology, a lot of features beyond strictly the EV features. And that's one where I think that's a perfect example. As a matter of fact, we recognized LG just recently at our Supplier of the Year event for the innovation and the partnership that they're bringing to that vehicle. There is some technology there that none of us thought could be done as quickly as it was. And again, I think we're getting first to market with that kind of technology, and we're really excited about it.
Where does cruise automation fit in with what you're doing in autonomous? They write code and software that helps control autonomous cars. You guys have your own internal operations. What do they bring? Were they ahead of you guys in terms of that software? You know, talk about that relationship.
Yeah, so it's a great question, and it's a great company. It's a company that we've known for some time here, and we've watched the work that they're doing. They're doing some amazing work. I would say that they really have some industry leading work. And when we looked at what they were doing, we felt that it could accelerate our autonomous program by that acquisition. So there's very specific features that they have that I think are really quite impressive. Nothing against the internal work that we were doing, but we felt by complementing it with some of the work that they did, we could get to demo vehicles and get to market faster. And also, I think it's really important when we talk about the new General Motors is how fast we're able to work with companies like that. I mean, the time from initial discussion to acquisition is just incredible these days. I mean, it's really, you know, GM at the speed of light, and it's really fun to watch. And I think it also shows I don't want to say humbleness, but it's, you know, there was a day where some might have called GM too arrogant to work with outsiders like that. I think these days we're very open to bringing the best technology from wherever it may come, suppliers, our own, universities, wherever, to accelerate innovation.
Steve, I'd like to ask you about something that happened this week that the Ford Motor Company talked about, and that's a big billion dollar plus renovation of their Dearborn facility over the next 10 years. And it reminded me that GM is doing some of the same work now out at the tech center and has some plans to renovate downtown as well. The main idea being that you want to create an atmosphere for work that's somewhat different than it was in the past, mm-hmm. that might stimulate innovation, stimulate creativity, and also attract people and maybe intercept people who are headed to the coast, who are headed to Austin or to or to Boston or to Brooklyn or to Palo Alto, and get them to come to Detroit to work for General Motors, and in the case of Ford, to Ford. Do you see this happening? Do you see this cultural change happening in General Motors? And is it unfolding in a way that you think will be positive in terms of bringing some of the great minds and talents to the company?
Yeah, also a great question. You know, first let me say, as a former supplier that was able to visit a lot of facilities all over the world, especially back in my powertrain space, when I look across General Motors has got some of the best powertrain facilities in the world, bar none. So the facilities in Rüsselsheim, Germany, the facilities at the headquarters in Pontiac. So I think General Motors' history of investing in these facilities is already quite significant and quite impressive. The investment that we made last year of the billion-dollar investment in our Warren Tech Center is to do exactly what you were describing. First of all, it's a tech center that's just historic. There's, you know, incredible things have come out of Warren over the last 60.
People should know, I just got to interrupt briefly, Eero Saarinen, the very famous Finnish architect, was the one who laid out that whole campus.
Right.
In fact, it was such a big deal, President Eisenhower was there for the unveiling. Yeah. That's how much of a role the auto industry still played.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to, but I just wanted to interject.
No, I appreciate it. And still, it's a National Historic Site. So, but the idea is there are some buildings and some facilities there that have become a bit stale. So this $1 billion investment is really to give our, mainly our engineers, but also all of our employees that are at that site, the best facilities in the world to work on, and really to inspire the next generations of engineers to want to come and work in the auto industry and work in Detroit. The concept of the workplace layout is also quite interesting. So we've done a lot of work with some of the Silicon Valley companies and other companies throughout the world looking at what the next generation of engineers desire in a workspace. And we're experimenting with a number of those, some going well, some not going so well. But it's really our dedication to just to make the environment the best place to work. And the last thing I would say is I sit on the board of the Berkeley Engineering School, and we've been very focused on recruiting engineers from the West Coast, been very, very successful. You'd be amazed at how many California kids we've encouraged to come to General Motors, to come to Detroit. We usually start the visit in the summer, not the winter, but it's been.
And they move here? They don't stay in your San Francisco office?
No, because these are folks that are doing hardcore engineering, so we've been extremely successful.
So has anybody yet been on a skateboard out in Warren, and are you allowed to bring your dog to work?
I'm sure someone's been on a skateboard, and I've seen a few dogs, but usually it's leader dogs. But yeah, we're not ready yet to have beach volleyball in the center of the campus. But it was a proposal. I'll tell you that it was a proposal from one of our employees.
I'm intrigued when you say that you've taken the step of turning the tables and asking some of your key suppliers to tell you what you should be doing. And I'm not prying for some of the bad news and all, but. What are some of the things that stand out in your mind that really benefited GM purchasing from that process?
Yeah, the biggest thing I would say, and usually the way I pose the question to our suppliers, because I, having been one, is they all sit in their boardrooms and they always say, if General Motors would just do this one thing, I could help them so much. And those are the kinds of things I'm trying to draw out, that we're trying to draw out. And when you ask the question that way, it's amazing the ideas that you get. Typically, what I think has been a problem in the past is, depending on where the ideas come into the company, there can be a resistance within a function, because a lot of these problems are sort of complex. They bridge engineering, purchasing, manufacturing, sales, and you have to basically take an approach that at a high enough level in the organization that can break down the silos and get the ideas implemented. And we did this, as you know, at our Supplier of the Year event a year ago. We asked our top 79 suppliers for their best ideas. It was amazing, the ideas that came in. Within 30 days, we had over 100 ideas. We implemented more than half of them, and I can tell you the results were millions of dollars of savings, just from a simple question of, what would you have us do?
If a supplier has a problem, does he have a direct route to get to you? Even I'm talking about some of the smaller ones. I'm sure people at Delphi or Johnson Controls or Weir can get to you if there's an issue. But can the smaller suppliers, if there's kind of an old school GM kind of issue that they need ironed out, can they get to you to get some?
They seem to be able to, because I get somehow my email's out there, and somehow if not email, I get a lot of it on LinkedIn. But yeah, I would say it's never perfect, but it is quite interesting. At some of these larger conferences that we attend, you always do find one or two people that, and I'm always fascinated by it, because quite often it's a very small supplier with what seems to be a very small problem, and I really enjoy sort of digging into them, because you learn a lot about. Well, the supplier, but you learn a lot about our own company's behavior. And we take every one of them serious and try to find a way to get to resolution, and I think we're getting better because of it.
Your title, of course, is Vice President of Global Purchasing. How do you coordinate the different activities, because you've got very different products, say, in China than you do here? There's overlap, but there's a lot of difference. Same with Europe. It's Opel's off doing its sort of thing right now. What are the ways that you're using to make sure that it's operating as one organization and not as a collection of different geographic regions?
Yeah, and I would say that Opel's not really off doing their own thing, because I feel as accountable for the Opel turnaround as anything else that we're doing. I actually sit on the advisory board of Opel. But the way we're organized is we have a global staff, and we've got key executives in each region. We meet on a weekly basis, and you might be surprised at how much of this stuff is extremely coordinated. Our top suppliers, of course, are all global, and when we talk to our big global suppliers, we have a process focused on our top 50 suppliers, which makes up almost half of our annual purchase value. Our top 50 suppliers do. And the coordination that we have between our regional vice presidents and our centralized team in North America here is really quite outstanding. The cooperation that we're getting, because quite often we need Europe to help South America, we need North America to help China. It all works quite seamlessly, and for the most part, it's because many of our platforms are global platforms, so there's a lot of sharing going on.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the greatest dreams that any supplier to the automobile industry can have is to someday be chosen by General Motors to be a supplier. Now, as a practical matter, many of the suppliers are tier two, tier three. They're suppliers to suppliers who end up in a General Motors car. But is it a reasonable dream today for any kind of innovator or entrepreneur to someday become a GM supplier? And how does that process actually start?
And we need this in about 30 seconds, by the way.
The answer is yes, it's possible. And for the most part, we encourage, you know, some of the smaller startups to work through the tiers. But, you know, there will always be occasions. If you get the right idea, the right technology, the right business model, we'll go direct. There's always that opportunity.
Very good. With that, we're going to have to wrap it up. I told you it'd go fast.
It did go fast.
Terrific. Steve Kiefer, thanks so much for coming in and sharing all this stuff of what's going on at GM. And congratulations, you know, from going from the bottom of the list to most supportive OEM and getting purchasing executive of the year. Quite a turnaround for you guys. Congratulations
on
that. David Welch, thank you for coming in. Daron Levine as well.
And a pleasure. Thank you.
Want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Underwriting for Autoline this week has been provided by BorgWarner.